This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Know that systemic racism isn't real. Why do you keep pushing it on America? You really think you're worth $5 million, a cyber truck, and stock in X? Why did you lie that Elon gave you a contract to have a show on Twitter in the first place? Isn't your life proof that black people can do anything because you have no discernible talent? Ah, oh, you are such a f***ing hack. Well, we did it, guys. We broke our own rule. We said we were never going to talk about Don Lemon again, and then we had to throw you that cold open because I was just so proud of the fine work that the team is doing over here. But that's it. We officially now have the Lemon List. The Lemon List, we will issue it once a month, where we just add a new person to it who we will just no longer talk about on this program. Let this be the last time that I say Don Lemon on the Rubin Report. And that's right, this is the Rubin Report. I'm Dave Rubin. It's March 28th, 2024. We're live streaming on Rumble, YouTube, and Locals. And yes, it is true. We were about a minute or two late today. We've got a jam-packed. I've got a lot of paper here, a lot of notes, a lot of scribbles. Big show for you. It's a little bit of everything, really launching off with a rather extraordinary appearance by Coleman Hughes. Coleman Hughes is, I would say, kind of an old school liberal thinker, happens to be black. He's been on this show before. I saw him at ARC in London. We've gotten into debates. We have some agreements and some disagreements. In any event, he was on The View, and they grilled him like they were going after somebody who just murdered a family. All five of them absolutely ganging up on him. And the guy just kept his cool, laid out his beliefs, and really exposed a lot of the leftist nonsense. So we're going to connect that to this Baltimore Bridge situation, because there are some connections even when we have these kind of disasters and some of the ideas that get us to these disasters. We're going to connect that to Trump, and we got a happy ending on, well, not a happy ending. Not, well, it's going to, there's a, you'll enjoy the ending of the show also, so. All right, let's go. So yes, Coleman Hughes, who he's an author. He's now also a CNN contributor. He, again, happens to be black and shares his political views, and they don't fall all within that woke box. So just watch the way the ladies of The View treated him. Here he is trying to explain that race should not be part of public policy, but Sonny Hostin, noted racist lunatic Sonny Hostin, she's just not having it.
The default right now in a lot of areas of policy is to use, you know, black and Hispanic identity as a proxy for disadvantage. And my argument is that you actually get a better picture of who needs help by looking at socioeconomics and income. Mm-hmm. That picks out people in a more accurate way.
Well, right. So, question, but when you say that socioeconomics picks out people in a better way than mm-hmm. race, mm-hmm. when you do look at the socioeconomics, you see the huge disparity between white households and black households. You see the huge disparity between white households and Hispanic households. So your argument, and I've read your book twice because I wanted to give it a chance, your argument that race has no place in that equation is really fundamentally flawed, in my opinion.
Well, there's two separate questions. One is whether each racial group is socioeconomically the same. That, well, I agree with you. They're not. And the stats show that. But of course, I agree with that fully. The question is, how do you address that in the way that actually targets poverty the best?
Great.
And what Martin Luther King wrote in his book, Why We Can't Wait, mm-hmm. is he called it, we need a Bill of Rights for the disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. And he said, yes, we should address racial inequality. Yes, right. We should address the legacy of slavery. But the way to do that is on the basis of class. And that will disproportionately target blacks and Hispanics because they're disproportionately poor, but it will be doing so in a way that also helps the white poor, in a way that addresses poverty.
All right, so first off, most importantly, we should address the fact that Sonny is wearing a cast on her arm there. Apparently she was in a roller skating accident, which seems hilarious to me, but let's just get that out of the way. Coleman did not beat her or anything else right before the program. So he is clearly making the point that many economists, aka racists, have made for a long time, which is that although there is some disparity in, say, if you were to look at the economic status of white people and Latino people and black people, and notice they never bring up Asian people, they never bring up people from India, they don't want to bring up Jews in this case because these things don't fit in their equation. They basically want it to be white people versus, let's say, perceived brown people, right? And what he is trying to say is, okay, the way you would resolve that. Now, first off, it should be noted that groups are just different. Groups are just different. That is how it is. Groups eat different foods, listen to different music, have different cultural traditions and religious traditions and traditions as it relates to family and work and all of those things. Like that is just real. Differences do exist. That doesn't mean that the entire system is racist. His point is, if you'd like to sort that out, if you'd like to get that to be a little more even, if that's a just idea, then the way you would do it is you would address all of the class problems, meaning the economic problems, because by the way, there are plenty of poor white people. You know, when these types of people always make fun of white trash and people living in trailer parks and everything else, it's not that there aren't a ton of poor white people. There obviously are. Now, of course, the other thing that fits within their flawed argument is that they really don't want this group to grow this way so they're equal with this guy's. What they want to do is drag these people down as they're raising these people. And eventually, this is the part that they really never tell you. They want it to be like this, where the black and brown people will be up here and those poor white people will be down there. Anyway, it continues, and just watch. This is such an unbelievable ad hominem, and it's so great when they just expose themselves and they don't even realize it. Here's Sonny trying to discredit Coleman by basically saying he's popular with conservatives, so obviously he's evil and or a tool.
As the thing to be addressed.
That part is true, but as you are a student of Dr. King, I'm not only a student of Dr. King, I know his daughter, Bernice, right? Mm. So I'm going to get to my question.
Go ahead, go right ahead.
I think the premise is fundamentally flawed. So rather than class, he did write about that earlier on, right before his death. He made the argument for racial equality and racial reparations. And so your argument for colorblindness, I think, is something that the right has co-opted. And so many in the black community, if I'm being honest with you, because I want to be, believe that you are being used as a pawn by the right and that you're a charlatan of sorts.
He's not a Republican.
So how do you...
You've
said that you're a conservative.
No,
you did. You actually said that in a podcast that you did 2 weeks ago.
I said I was a conservative.
Yes, you did. My question to you is, how do you respond to those critics?
Okay, let's let him answer.
I think it's very important. The quote that you just pointed out about doing something special for the Negro, that's from the book Why We Can't Wait that I just mentioned.
Yes.
A couple paragraphs later, he lays out exactly what that something special was.
Yes.
And it was the Bill of Rights for the Disadvantaged, a broad class-based policy.
But he also says you must include race.
No, he didn't. He says it's...
Yes, he does.
Okay, well, everyone should go read the book Why We Can't Wait. Let's not get sidetracked.
Okay, she is so unlikable. It is just like the pandering there, and she read the book twice, and I'm friends with that. Like, it's just like she's just absolutely terrible. But to accuse someone, so here he is. He's a thoughtful, interesting guy who clearly knows his stuff. And to counter to him, many think you're a pawn. In essence, you are a sellout by those scary conservatives. Then she accuses him of saying he's a conservative. I've never heard him say he's a conservative. By the way, I will tell you this. When I was at the ARC conference at a party one night in London with him and about 20 people, we got into a huge debate. It was like a Rubin Report reunion show. Tons of people who had been on the show. And we got into a huge debate about what they should be doing in England as it relates to these Hamas rallies and Islamist rallies and closing down streets and all of this stuff. And he was taking more of what I would say is the purely liberal position of just let them do whatever they want, it's all free speech. And I was taking, alongside Douglas Murray, more of the position of, no, you better start doing something about this now. So the idea that the guy is somehow a conservative, I also think he's pro-choice, and as we're gonna play in just a moment, he's only voted for Democrats so far. But you guys get this. This is what they do. They impugn the motives. And then you can see when she says, oh, you said you're a conservative, then the other one's like, well, he never said he was a Republican. Like, the default position is that conservative and Republican either means you're an idiot or you're a racist or you're a sellout. And that's just evil. It's just evil. And by the way, would they ever grill a Democrat politician the way they all ganged up on him? We're going to show you one more clip of this. But they all took turns going after him. Now imagine if they brought on Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden. Well, you've seen those videos of them doing it. They basically just blow them the whole time. But here, a young, thoughtful liberal, I mean, that's the irony. He's an old school liberal, gets up there and he has to just get ransacked by all of them. Anyway, Hughes just continued to calmly disassemble all of them.
I don't think I've been co-opted by anyone. I've only voted twice, both for Democrats. Mm-hmm. Although I'm an independent, I would vote for a Republican, mm-hmm. probably a non-Trump Republican if they were compelling. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's any evidence I've been co-opted by anyone. And I think that that's an ad hominem tactic people use to not address really the important conversations we're having here. And I think it's better, and it would be better for everyone if we stuck to the topics rather than make it about me.
But with I want to give you the opportunity to respond to the criticism.
I appreciate it. There's no evidence that I've been co-opted by anyone. I have an independent podcast. Mm-hmm. I work for CNN as an analyst. Mm-hmm. I write for the Free Press. I'm independent in all of these endeavors, and no one is paying me to say what I'm saying. I'm saying it because I feel it.
Do you?
Okay, hold on. We got to go to break.
A whole bunch of people think you're a sellout and think you're a racist. Can you address that? And it's like he just calmly takes them out. Now, it is interesting, if you noted at the beginning of what he said there, that he's voted twice for Democrats and that he would vote for a non-Trump Republican. So I would say he fits into that thing that I'm always talking about. The disaffected liberal, and what is it that will take to get them to vote for Trump? It sounds like even he at this point, who has devoted his life to fighting against wokeness and all of these illiberal forces, will not vote for Trump now. So that's sort of like in, like, let's say the Bill Maher area. And it's like, well, what do you do about that if you're Donald Trump? If you're a Republican right now, or you're thinking about maybe being his VP, or he's trying to figure out who's going to be his VP, you've got to figure out a way to get these people, because he just went up there, got attacked by all the wokesters, and then basically said, I'm going to vote for the same person you're going to vote for, in essence, right? Like, I'm not voting for Trump. That's basically what he said. So they're all going to end up voting for Biden up there, ushering in all of these policies. We should contact him, and let's get him on the show again to discuss that. I do have one more clip of this, because as I said, we showed you a bunch of sunny ones, but they all went around with their pointed questions. And watch this, Joy. Watch her read the question, and basically, as she's reading the question, admit she doesn't even know what she's saying, and yet he still does deal with it quite well.
I have a question, because you write that the anti-racism movement, there are a couple of people, I don't even know who they are, maybe you know.
Robin DiAngelo,
yeah. Ibram Kendi, for instance.
Okay. Well, you say that that is just another form of racism, and you even say it has a lot in common with white supremacy. How can you compare those two things? You're comparing it to white supremacy.
Because they both view your race as an extremely significant part of who you are. So white supremacists, they obviously say, we all know what they say, okay? Neo-racists like Rob DiAngelo, they say that to be white is to be ignorant, for example. Well, this is a racial stereotype, and I want to call a spade and say this is not the style of anti-racism we have to be teaching our kids. We should be teaching them that your race is not a significant feature of you, who you are. Who you are is your character, your value, and your skin color doesn't say anything about that.
That's actually misrepresenting what Robin DiAngelo's position is.
It's in her book. I view this notion of a colorblind society similar to the idea of a peaceful society, which is to say it's an ideal, it's a North Star, mm-hmm. and the point is not that we're ever going to get there, we're not going to touch it, but we have to know when we're going forward and when we're going backwards, and we're going backwards when we're doing woke kindergarten in San Francisco.
He's just right, and he's good, and he's calm, and he's thoughtful, and he dealt with those harpies in just a perfect way. Now, again, I have some differences of opinion with him. I mentioned one as it relates to all these crazy rallies in Europe that we got into, and be happy to discuss that with him on the show. And also, like, you're going to end up, as far as I can tell, voting for the same people that ushered in all these policies. So that's not to say I agree with him on everything, but just dealing with them properly. And also that Joy, the way she reads it off a card, basically says, I don't know what I'm saying, but they handed me a card here. Can you explain this thing? And then, of course, we know that the idea of white supremacy, your race is above everybody else is the exact same thing. It's just the mirror image of the neo-racism that the woke people have tried to usher in. But now let's connect this all to what's actually happening policy-wise, and some of this even relates to this horrific bridge collapse in Baltimore. We'll talk about that in a second, but let me tell you about Gravity Defier shoes. Guys, you know my recent discovery, G-Defy shoes. That's G-D-E-F-Y shoes. Let me tell you, they're simply amazing. No, they're beyond amazing. G-Defy is a footwear company on a mission to relieve knee, back, and foot pain. As many of you guys know, I've struggled with my knee from balling all these years, but the moment I slipped into my G-Defy shoes, the pain just vanished. How does G-Defy achieve this ultimate comfort? Firstly, every pair comes with free custom orthotics to align your body perfectly. Then there's this patented VersoShock trampoline technology in the heel, which absorbs harmful shocks and provides renewed energy, empowering you to tackle your day. Additionally, G-Defy has integrated a strong structural system into their shoes that improves your posture and encourages you to walk using your calf and other major muscle groups. Don't take my word for it. Read the countless customer reviews raving about the pain relief and amazing comfort they have experienced with G-Defy shoes. I, for one, can't get enough of them, and I wholeheartedly recommend them to anyone looking for relief. Experience the comfort and pain relief for yourself. Visit G-Defy.com today and use code Ruben30 for $30 off orders 150 or more. And now back to me. All right, so the other story that was happening this week, or really what should be the main story, is there was this absolutely horrific collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore, Maryland. Now it is being treated as a mass casualty event. There's apparently some people still missing. It's a little unclear on the numbers, but let's just give you a quick update from Fox.
Well, good morning, Carly and Todd. We're learning that it is being treated as a mass casualty event, and we spoke with Kevin Cartwright of the Baltimore City Fire Department, says that the current number is 20, they believe, in the water with rescue crews in the water. Now, behind me is where the Francis Scott Key Bridge would have been. And just to orient you a little bit, the majority of the shipping lanes come out of that Chesapeake Bay through the Patapsco River into Baltimore Harbor, and so that is where around 1:30 this morning that ship hit the bridge. It's a Singapore flagged ship that hit the bridge, causing the bridge to collapse. The latest is this is being treated as a mass casualty event, and the current number they believe possibly in the water is 20. I asked how many vehicles may have been lost into the water. They said they don't have an exact count on that. We'll get you more as we get it, as we watch the emergency crews and personnel arriving.
Has anybody indicated at all that they might be thinking this was intentional, or is this being considered an accident right now?
Well, I don't know, and we're waiting, hopefully, to get either Kevin Cartwright, the Baltimore Fire Department, City Fire Department guy we talked to, or someone else on scene.
All right, so it's absolutely wild, horrific. I wanted to show you some drone footage. I don't think there's any audio, so I'll kind of talk you through it, or you can just take a look, but here's the aftermath. So that's part of the ship, obviously, which was a cargo ship, and bridge on top of it. What did it sound like, the last numbers that we just checked? It sounded like maybe 6 people dead, and what's that? 20 people dead? 20 people dead, wow. So they're still figuring this out. But just to see, you know, this bridge was built in 1977. It's not that old. And they'll have all sorts of questions about the engineering and what happened to the ship, which it sounds like the power was going in and out beforehand. And we'll find out all about that. But you might be watching this going, okay, that's interesting and tragic. But what does it have to do with all of this racial stuff? Well, now I want to show you a video of Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott. And note how he brings immigration, which has a subtext of skin color, when he's talking about this.
For those who lost their lives, especially these immigrants who are working on the bridge, will there be a fund set up or something? Because these were the people who were bringing home the salary that was helping them live here.
Listen, we will support the families of our residents every way we can, and includes financially. We'll be talking and discussing with those folks and with the folks that they work for how to do all that. We have to do that in decency and in order, but we'll be supporting those families in every single way, and that includes financially.
Baltimore Mayor Brandon Scott, thank you very much.
Did you catch that line there? I want to read it back to you, the way it was framed by Mika Brzezinski over on the televised mental institution known as MSNBC. For those who lost their lives, especially these immigrants who were working on the bridge, will there be a fund set up? Now, look, I know that doesn't sound like so horrific on top, but why would we care more about the about immigrants, again, whether they're legal immigrants or illegal immigrants, why would we care about more about them versus anybody else, versus a second generation person who was working on the bridge or who was on the boat or who was driving on the bridge in the first place? So sometimes the way they racialize everything, because there is always a racial connotation when we're talking about immigration, it's subtle. It's not just overt. She's not just saying, can we create a fund for the black people who were killed on the bridge? But there's another subtle piece of it that I think we have to watch out for, because you always wonder. I always show you that clip of Jordan, how does tyranny come? They push and push and push. Well, it's these weird ways the media frames things in odd ways to make things get worse and worse. All right, we're going to jump to the other side of woke Democrats, because yes, they just are not stopping, although they are exposing themselves as Marxist. You know, remember years ago, Bernie used to always say he was a social Democrat. What was it? A socialist Democrat? He would say I'm a democratic socialist. And I kept saying, the one day they will just drop the Democrat part. And basically, they almost skipped the socialist part. Now they're just basically going to full Marxism. We'll get to that in just a sec. Let me tell you guys about Fast Growing Trees, guys. Did you know that Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the U.S.? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, house plants, and so much more. Whatever you're interested in, they have it for you. Find the perfect fit for your climate and space. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. And along with their 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee, they offer free plant consultation forever. Guys, you know I'm really into greenery and building gardens, and I guarantee you these guys are the best for that. We got to put some video up of my garden. It's seriously like perfect. The experts at Fast Growing Trees curate thousands of plants so you can find the perfect fit for your specific climate, location, and needs. You don't have to drive around to nurseries and big gardening centers. Whether you're looking for some privacy, shade, or natural beauty for your yard, Fast Growing Trees has in-house experts ready to help you make the right selection with growing and care advice available 24/7. This spring, they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners of our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code Ruben at checkout. That's an additional 15% off FastGrowingTrees.com using promo code Ruben at checkout. FastGrowingTrees.com code Ruben. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. And now back to me. So yes, what we have seen over the last little bit is that really the Democrats have gone from equality to equity, which is basically going from liberalism, the promise of opportunity for everybody. We won't have laws that discriminate against everybody. You have a chance to do it, and we will not be racist in that. And just some people will get further than others. That's how life works. Versus the promise of equity, which is a Marxist idea that we will all have the same thing. I always reference that Kamala Harris video that she put out on Twitter the day before the election, where she talked about us all ending in the same place. And people should, I suppose more people should have gone, my God, the vice president actually is a Marxist. Well, this is what every single one of their policies has ushered in. So now I want to show you a video of how Democrats are basically just admitting this at this point. This is from a YouTube channel known as Jubilee, where they bring on a bunch of different people to debate different things. And I want you to listen to this young man talk about how America is treating him.
I grew up very much with the idea that everything I need is under capitalism. Individualism, freedom, all these things are under capitalism. But I'm black in America. So those contradictions really just create that friction where I'm like, this doesn't align with what I was told and what I'm actually seeing or actually feeling. Mm-hmm. So why did I come to communism? When I actually read it, when I went from Marx to Lenin, to Mao, to Deng, to Fred Hampton, I started realizing like, oh, this is patriotism. This is the idea that I look at another American and think to myself, I want you to be fed. I want you to feel fulfilled in your life. I want you to feel like you actually have control within your society.
It's so thin. It's incredible. So I don't want to make this about that guy specifically. I don't know who he is, but it's a big YouTube channel that puts these people on to push out these ideas. When he talks about capitalism, he thought it was about individualism and freedom. Yeah, it is. America has actually created more millionaires, created a more robust middle class, all of those things. You have the ability to do whatever you want. Then they look at But what they've done, because you have to give the wokesters and the leftists credit, they took over the institutions and they confused several generations of young people to think, oh, that the communists are the good guys. So at the end there, when he's like, oh, I look at my neighbor and I want to help you, it's like, all right, well, who are you helping? If you help yourself first, if you help your local community first, if you help your friends and family first, then you might start helping everybody else. So it's a very thin notion, like, oh, we're just all going to help each other. We're just all going to, and we'll all end up with the same stuff. But of course, to end up with the same stuff, you're going to have to take away stuff from an awful lot of people. And what right? I mean, that the sickest thing that Bernie did in all of these years that he sort of politically ushered this in. I get it, they did it at the universities. But the sickest thing that Bernie did was he ushered in the idea that taking from somebody else just because you want to is the just thing to do. Even now, Elizabeth Warren put out a video a couple days ago where she was talking about her new millionaire's tax and everything else. And it's just like, and they should just pay a little bit more. And if you don't really think about it, it does kind of make sense. Well, they've got stuff, so why can't we just have their stuff? But why should we take their stuff? And why should you have control, Elizabeth Warren, of where it goes? So you can see that this idea, this is very twisted. If you would have said 20 years ago in America, boy, there's going to be an actual Marxist communist movement here, and it's going to be flooded online, and it's going to be talked about, that the Democrat Party would basically have gone that route, most people would have thought you were crazy, but here we are. And of course, they do this also by pushing all of their giant government programs. So here is video of Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm, who's a far left progressive. And of course, she wants the Green New Deal. And do you think this could have anything to do with furthering her political agenda?
We're trying to embed structural equity into a system that has been structurally inequitable. And it's not just the community benefits plans, but it's also the way these tax incentives have been structured.
Oh, yes, we want structural equity. Think about what that means. That would, you could call that systemic racism, right? What she wants are laws that will punish certain people so that we all end up on the other side. Sounds like she's worth a cool $8 million. That's not too much. She's not doing Elizabeth Warren level money. She's not doing Nancy Pelosi level money. But what she is doing is ushering in woke ideology to push for Marxist laws, more control of the government, more government control of corporations and everything else. And this is, of course, virtually everybody through this administration. And that really has been the flaw of the Democrats. So when I say to you before, when Coleman Hughes is like, well, I'm not going to vote. I wouldn't vote for Trump, in essence, is what he said. It's like, okay, so you're fighting all of these ideas, but you're going to end up voting for the same people that Sonny Hostin is going to vote for. And that is a problem because everybody, a huge amount of people, thought that Joe Biden was going to be the buffer. He'd slow down the woke. But nobody, this administration has basically ushered it in on steroids. Check out Dr. Jill Biden. Here she is at the Human Rights Commission with several lies, all, I would say, disguising the fact that she basically is a communist too.
History teaches us that democracies don't disappear overnight. They disappear slowly, subtly, silently. A book ban, a court decision, a don't say gay law. Before World War II, I'm told, Berlin was the center of LGBTQ culture in Europe. One group of people loses their rights, and then another, and then another. Until one morning you wake up and you no longer live in a democracy.
I mean, there's just all nonsense there. It's all nonsense. A book ban. Yes, it is true that individual districts in Florida have been empowered to get basically pornography out of the schools, right? The parents have said, we're going to have some autonomy when it comes to what our children can learn, right? So that's what they call a book ban. What was the second one? I can't even read what I wrote here. Court decisions. She wrote says court decisions. Oh, which court decisions are you talking about, lady? Are you talking about the fact that there is a clown court, several clown courts going after Donald Trump right now? Because I don't think that's what you meant there. And then, of course, she mentions don't say gay, which, again, the word gay wasn't in the bill. Note, nobody has been put in jail. How many gays have been jailed in Florida since don't say gay? Does anyone know? Like, it's just all nonsense. But they want to scare the F out of you. right? Like, that's what they want to do. I do want to mention real quick, actually, can we throw up the image? I was going to mention this up top, but as it relates to don't say gay, well, actually, as of yesterday, let me read the headline for you. Disney agrees to settle Florida lawsuit with special district backed by DeSantis. So DeSantis beat Disney 100%. Everyone said it couldn't be done. Everyone said it was an unfair use of government power and everything else, but he beat them. He took away their special rights and all their privileges. They will just be treated like any other corporation. And guess what? They ain't gonna flee Florida, and the tourists will still come here, and it will add to free market capitalism, because now SeaWorld will have the same, will be guided by the same laws and everything else, and Gator World, that Disney will be. So when they say, don't say gay and everything else, it's just all lies. But now let me connect that to a person who a year ago was a sane Democrat, but is no longer a Democrat, because she realized which direction the Democrats are going. And surprise, surprise, I'm talking about Tulsi Gabbard. Here she is talking about what will happen if the Democrat elites win this next election.
It is that that hatred of what they view America to be, an actual hatred, and this desire to rebuild it in something that they view as a utopia in their minds, which leads to the deepest problem of all, which is they really, whether they realize it or not, they think they're God. And that they have the, that they know better for everyone else than we know for ourselves.
Wow. Did you, so you ran into that a lot when
you were, absolutely.
Yeah.
And again, like, you know, you don't run around and hear people say, like, I am God most of the
time.
But
we have to change these people.
But you look at their actions and, like, yes, well, they don't know what's best for them. So we have to make decisions for them. We can't allow them the freedom to make the quote unquote wrong choice, because they will hurt not only themselves, but they'll destroy democracy. So we're going to take away the freedom that exists in this democracy and we'll make the decision for them, which is what we're seeing play out right here and right now. But also right alongside that is, as I was mentioning, like, who's the power that these people are afraid of? Because yes, they are afraid of losing power. These politicians are afraid of losing power. And yes, I am sounding the alarm on how the Democrat elite specifically are doing all they can to undermine our fundamental freedoms, which is really what this election is all about. That is what is at stake in this election.
Correct.
Because if they're allowed to stay in power, there should be no doubt in anyone's mind, whatever you think about any candidate, I don't care who, and this is whether it's Biden or whoever, if it's not Biden, it may be Kamala Harris, whoever it is, they're all the same. They have the same objectives. If they're allowed to stay in power, they will run around this country saying, the voters gave us a mandate to continue the work that we are doing.
That's so true.
Which will escalate this spiral towards a more oppressed, less free, less safe, less secure society.
Idea.
Donald Trump, I want to talk directly to you right now. That is your VP if you want to win the election. My God, she, not only everything she said there was freaking true, she gets it. She's younger. She's pretty. She's in the military. She's got every freaking thing you need. She's an ex-Democrat. She's the type that could bring the Coleman Hughes across the finish line. Maybe not the Bill Maher's, but you get it. Like, she's telling what the truth is, because she's also right when she talks about what they would do with the mandate. Think about it. If they win this next election, there will be no reason. If you think they've burst forth as communists and Marxists and people who want to completely control your children's education and the borders, which they don't want to control, it's type of control, not controlling something, and all of those things, and the horrific foreign policy we've seen in these last 3 years, they will be like, well, the whole country voted for it again. Let's roll. Like, the mask will be completely off. So Trump, you better really think about it. Please consider that woman. Like, that really is the chance. Now, of course, the other thing that we're always up against, for those of us that are sane and not, and can agree to disagree, and maybe we don't all think the same thing about taxes or foreign policy or anything, but we're just against the woke thing and what the Democrats have become at the moment. The advantage that they always have is they have a well-funded machine behind them. They have mainstream media, they have the corporations and everything else. So here is Stephen Colbert, quote-unquote comedian Stephen Colbert, 20 writers at least to put on that show. And he's very upset right now that the machine's plan to take out Trump appears not to be working, because more and more people are waking up.
You know, folks, I consider myself a deep spiritual thinker.
I frequently ponder the age-old questions like, why do bad things happen to good people? And why do good things ever happen to Donald Trump? Yesterday, the Trump Media and Technology Group, or HPV, which owns Truth Social, completed a deal to go public. According to Bloomberg News, that deal increased Trump's net worth by more than $4 billion, making him one of the world's 500 richest people. He made over $4 billion misspelling things on the toilet. My God, I hope that article is misinformated.
Boo! The Orange Man, his company went public. People are interested in that company, are going to buy shares of it, and boo, the Orange Man will have more money. We're trying to destroy him. It's just nothingness. Like, it's just, even when he can't even, he's so inauthentic, even when he's telling you that he thinks about things deeply and all that, you're just like, you do not. But unfortunately, because they have so many of these people well-placed in the media, they still are confusing people. And I think one of the things that we're going to really all have to figure out as it gets closer to the election is that for all of us that are somewhat awake as opposed to woke online, the disconnect and between the influence that we might have and what the machine still is able to convince people of, that chasm is really freaking wide. So another guy who used to work with Stephen Colbert, who they gave a show again, his Daily Show host, Jon Stewart. It's no longer a Daily Show because it wasn't profitable, obviously, and he's now doing it once a week, but they still call it the Daily Show. And here he is going after Kevin O'Leary. Now, Kevin O'Leary, we've shown you a bunch of clips of him lately because he has been defending Donald Trump in these clown court cases. Again, the major case was the New York case, which was about overinflating the property, Trump's properties, for loans. Everybody got paid back. Trump was still fined $464 million, which a later judge, an appeals court, lowered to $175 million. But Kevin O'Leary has been defending him and saying this is not even about Trump. This is about weaponized judicial systems. That really is the problem. But the machine has brought Jon Stewart back to try to take out anyone that makes sense. Take a look at this comedy. Yeah, I guess we'll call it comedy. Okay.
Surprised to hear this from Kevin O'Leary, a guy who's such an asshole. Wait. That even the other people on Shark Tank thinks he's an asshole. Now, he's very chill. How is he not this mad about overvaluations in the real world? Because they are not victimless crimes. First, the banks got paid back at lower interest rates, although, to be honest, who gives a shit? But second, money isn't infinite. A loan that goes to the liar doesn't go to someone who's giving a more honest evaluation. So the system becomes incentivized for corruption. And this is part of a different Trump fraud case, but avoiding taxes hurts all of us. Donald Trump shenanigans cost the city of New York. And to be honest, f***ing entitled arrogance. I don't know if you know this, but most people just can't commit fraud and expect to face no repercussions, even if everyone's doing it. Try getting a car loan by saying you have 10 times as much money as you really do, or claim 20 dependents when you have no children, or say you make slightly less money to qualify for food assistance. I will guarantee you there are not just financial consequences for those lies, but criminal ones. But don't tell that to the investment community, because in their minds, in pursuit of profit, there is no rule that cannot be bent. There is no principle that cannot be undercut, as long as you and your f***ing friends are making money.
Everything he just said there was the reverse of the truth, because if you go for a car loan, you can't just tell the bank, right? So you go to buy... I remember my last car loan was to get a Chevy Equinox. I didn't walk into Chevy and just say, hey, I'd like to put down $200. Could you lay out the 25 grand for me? And they're like, well, you'd like 25 grand. We sure'd like to give it to you. No, they do a credit check on you. They see how much credit they think you'll be able to pay back and what the interest rate's going to be and everything else, which is exactly what the banks did as it pertained to Trump. And then the banks all got paid back. So these people, they... Jon Stewart, like, you've got to be worth probably $100 million, and you hate the system that allowed you to do that. That's deeply depressing at the very least. But of course, the internet sleuths, they get into stuff pretty quickly. And then this came out literally yesterday, within 24 hours of Jon Stewart doing that bit. This is from the New York Post. It didn't take long for the internet sleuths to look into Stewart's own property history, which shows his New York City penthouse sold for 829% more than its assessed value, records confirmed by the Post reveal. In 2014, Stewart sold his 6,280-square-foot Tribeca duplex to financier Parag Pandey for $17.5 million. The property's asking price at the time is not available in the listing records, but according to 2013-2014 assessor records obtained by the Post, the property had the estimated market value of $1.882 million. The actual assessor valuation was even lower at $847,000. Records also show that Stewart paid significantly lower property taxes, which were calculated based on the assessor valuation price, precisely what he called Trump out for doing in his Monday monologue. Pandey, who purchased the penthouse from Stewart, then resold the property at a nearly 26% loss, according to The Real Deal, at just $13 million in 2021. Surprise, surprise. Anyway, Stewart did respond to it. I think it's worth reading his glib response. OMG, I've been caught doing something not remotely similar to Trump. Actually, same thing. I guess all I need to do now is start a fraud college, steal classified docs, bankrupt casinos, pay hush money, grab pussies, discriminate in housing, cheat at golf, and foment insurrection, and you'll revere me. All right. Yeah. Okay, so the machine pays you well to do that stuff. But what else does the machine do? The machine also goes after everyone who is doing good. I would say one of the guys, maybe the guy doing the most good right now, is Elon Musk, because Elon Musk has allowed more and more people to speak freely on X, which is the basic place for communication in 2024. That does mean that mean people, bad people, or just troll people say mean things. Trust me, my Twitter mentions can be quite disgusting. But I'd rather that than have it be more controlled. Well, 60 Minutes is now trying to take out Twitter once again. They do this constantly. They're very upset. And they did a whole series on this using a Washington a University of Washington professor. Her name is Kate Starbird. And here she is talking about that they're not responding to enough of the misinformation that's being flagged for them on that damn free speech platform.
Kate Starbird says the social media platforms also often ignored the researchers' suggestions.
The statistics I've seen are just for the Twitter platform, but my understanding is that they responded to about 30% of the things that we sent them. And I think on the majority of those, they put labels.
But just a third.
But just a third, yeah.
And do you suspect that Facebook was the same?
Surely that woman couldn't have a political agenda. I wonder which party she votes for. You know, could you possibly tell? Do you think she's giving us any hints on what her political ideology might be with the haircut and everything else? Like, come on. How could they only respond? We're some sort of serious people. We research misinformation and we send it to them and they only respond to 30% of it, those bad people. Meanwhile, ironically, what actually has happened since Elon took over Twitter about a year and a half ago is the fact-checking apparatus is a zillion times better, because instead of it being done secretly behind closed doors where they would just shadow ban you so people couldn't see your tweets, or they would outright suspend you or anything else, but there was basically a system that nobody knew what was taking place, now they have something called community notes. And people, when you lie on Twitter, you get hit with a community note. And community notes, when you click into it, gives you several websites to look at to actually fact-check yourself. So they've done a way, way better job than before Elon, but oddly, I don't think 60 Minutes did any reports on Twitter pre-Elon. That's quite curious. Anyway, this is a great moment. So further in the report, they found out that Nancy Pelosi pushed Facebook to take down content portraying her as drunk. This one's just kind of fun.
Can we talk about a specific case? It's of Nancy Pelosi. It's a doctored tape where she looks drunk.
We want to give this president the opportunity to do something historic.
This was the video of then House Speaker Pelosi posted to Facebook in 2019, slowed down to make it seem that she was slurring her words.
Did it come down?
It did not.
Why?
Because it didn't violate the policies that they had.
So did she put pressure on the company to take it down?
She was definitely not pleased. She definitely wanted
yes?
the company, yes. And it really damaged the relationship that the company had with her.
Was that woman wearing a cape? Did you see that? She's bringing the cape back? Okay, first off, you're allowed to slow down videos to make fun of people, especially public people. You're allowed, well, didn't they take that down? Look, we have major, major legit issues as it pertains to misinformation, especially in an age of AI, because there is stuff coming out right now. We're not showing it today, but we'll get to it either tomorrow or on Monday. There are AI videos coming out right now where they have basically perfected the mouth. You know, the thing about AI, when they're showing you a lot of these videos, the thing that kind of tips it off is the mouth doesn't quite match up, looks a little bit weird, or something with the fingers looks a little weird. They have already like elevated the ability to do that in just 2 or 3 months, in the last 2 or 3 months. So we have major issues as it comes to like, could somebody AI create a video of Joe Biden saying we're about to drop a bomb, a nuclear bomb on Mexico? Yes, there will be real things that we have to talk about related to that. But a kid or a meme maker slowing down a video to make Nancy Pelosi look drunk, and that basically 60 Minutes is like, why didn't you people do more about that? It's just absolutely terrible. But of course, what the real goal here is to limit your speech. And then ultimately, once they can limit your speech, well, what else can they limit? They can probably limit your autonomy, your decision-making over your own life. We've played a couple of videos of this guy over the years. This is Yuval Noah Hariri, who is basically the number two guy over at the World Economic Forum. He's not quite as outwardly evil as Klaus Schwab. But listen to him talk about how COVID really was the key piece to get us to this, well, he doesn't say it, I'll say it, dystopian world that they're trying to drag us into.
Please welcome Yuval Noah Harari.
COVID is critical because this is what convinces people to accept, to legitimize total biometric surveillance. We want to stop this epidemic. We need not just to monitor people, we need to monitor what's happening under their skin. What we have seen so far, it's corporations and governments collecting data about where we go, who we meet, what movies we watch. The next phase is the surveillance going under our skin. We now see mass surveillance systems established even in democratic countries, which previously rejected them. And we also see a change in the nature of surveillance. Previously, surveillance was mainly above the skin. Now it's going under the skin.
Embedded in his hand is a microchip that serves as his keys, his ID, and his wallet.
Governments want to know not just where we go or who we meet. Above all, they want to know what is happening under our skin. What's our body temperature? What's our blood pressure? What is our medical condition?
In a matter of seconds, the chip is inserted. The transformation is complete.
When scanned, all of a person's information about their vaccination status is shown on a reader or phone.
Humans are now hackable animals.
You will own nothing, and you will be happy.
I think that fake news have been with us for thousands of years. Just think of the Bible. You know, the whole idea that humans have, you know, this, they have this soul or spirit and they have free will and nobody knows what's happening inside me. So whatever I choose, whether in the election or whether in the supermarket, this is my free will, that's over.
All right, so the edit on that thing is from Alex Jones, and say what you want about Alex Jones, but like, I mean, they nailed the level of insanity that is coming our way, and in many ways is here already, right? And we know, like, the depressing reality, I think, is that we know if they bring back the next COVID or they'll call it something else or whatever the crisis is, right? Because what does he say at the top? He basically says, we needed COVID to start this. So we don't know that it'll be COVID-2 or they could literally just be like, all right, we've got, it's COVID-X, right? It's disease X. It's saying it's fine, COVID, maybe we overstated a little bit. This one's 10 times worse. And so many of the people that you watch right now will fall for the exact same thing. So many people who fell for it last time, but then woke up, they'll fall for it again. Or it'll be some other black swan event or terrorist attack or whatever. And it will always lead to more control. And, you know, I got a good idea for a sci-fi movie if someone wants to write this for me. You're going to basically have a whole bunch of people, basically 90% of human society is going to be half robot and digitized and controlled and be able to be hacked into. And now that, you know, with Neuralink, which obviously is amazing, they can get paraplegics to be able to play chess. And that's just the beginning of it. Well, wait till they can just basically control your mind and just press a button. And next thing you know, you're murdering somebody. Well, a good idea for a movie is that 90% of the people are going to be controlled by that freaking thing, and then wait till the system just says, oh, wait, there's 10% of the people who haven't been injected with everything, who haven't put all the robots and the nanobots into their systems, and they're living on farms and just living by themselves? They're the ones that are destroying the earth by farming and blah, blah, blah. Good idea for a movie. Can someone get on that? What's the point of all of this? Well, they want to criminalize the individual. They want to criminalize freedom of speech. They want to criminalize autonomy. And a guy who has been leading on all of those fronts in the name of technology and getting us to the next thing is Bill Gates. And listen to what he is really worried about here as we give him more control. He's very worried about something.
You know, even I worry that a wow, when it gets really good, you know, we'll have a problem that we've never even had to consider, which is a problem of excess, you know. And yes, we can take care of handicapped people, we can care of old people, we can reduce the length of the work week, you know, a lot of things, because work is not sort of the ultimate thing, like, oh no, I need more work. If you need more work, we'll run the clock backwards and all of us can be farmers trying to, you know, grow enough. Leisure time really is a good thing used properly, and we're going to have more leisure time. So you almost get into a philosophical question when you have this, food, disease, war, you know, those are taken care of. Okay, now, what is our highest fulfillment?
Man, we should have played that clip right after the Tulsi clip, because when Tulsi earlier was talking about that these people think they're gods, listen to what he just said. When we take care of food and water and war and all of these things, like, you cannot take care of all of these things. Like, nobody can, but you cannot, Bill Gates. By the way, Bill Gates is very worried about excess. Very worried about excess. He owns 240,000 acres of farmland in the United States. I have 0.9 acres here. It's pretty good. He owns 240,000 times that. Have you guys tried my tomatoes yet, though? They're pretty solid. Oh, yeah, I'm gonna get you guys some tomatoes today. So excess, Bill, when we just give you all of the control over everything and you solve all of our problems, then your biggest concern is, oh, my God, we won't even know what to do with ourselves. There is an alternative, people, and the alternative is figuring out what you want to do and going to do it and thinking about the future, because I'm not anti-technology. I want to explore worlds. I believe that we can figure out ways to manage all of this without it being evil and weird and creepy and controlling. And again, there is one guy trying to lead us to that. I think we showed you this one once, but I thought it would be a nice wrap up to today's show.
I mean, we got to be excited about the future. We got to do things that make us want to live. You know, it cannot always be about problems every day. I mean, do you want to wake up every morning and everything's just a problem? Well, what inspires you and what makes you excited about the future? There's got to be some things like that.
And that really is the answer. Figure out what inspires you without giving away all your freedom and all your autonomy to all these people. They're not going to stop coming. But like, we have serious political problems. We have, I would say, serious sort of secular right now problems here, but humans have been through worse. We can get there. I promise you we can. Unfortunately, guys, there's no post-game show today because I'm on John Bachman in Newsmax in just a minute. We went a little bit longer than I anticipated, but if you want to join us for all the insider stuff, it's rubinreport.locals.com. And tomorrow, are we doing it live tomorrow with Mr. No, but Vivek will be in studio tomorrow. You know, we got a little testy, the two of us, during the election. But he reached out to me. I immediately said yes. I said, let's break bread and figure out ways to build things together. So we're doing that in studio tomorrow. And actually, just yesterday, I interviewed Ben Shapiro in studio, which I think we will put up part one tomorrow. And we got into the whole damn thing. Anyway, a lot going on. So if you want to catch me on Newsmax, that's right now. And I will make it up to you, I promise. Goodbye.
We're dressed as doves to symbolize peace for the Palestinian people.
We're being encouraged to really embody birds.
Can I help you?
Yeah, here.
Oh, this is like a tag team dove situation. Yeah. What's your take on open relationships?
I don't have one.
Would you be in one?
No.
You think it's ethical to go through your partner's phone?
This is wild. This is super not about Palestine.
But like, just hypothetically?
Just hypothetically and realistically, not interested in talking about things that are not Palestinian liberation right now. Cool.
I just see like TikToks. After being a bird, do you think it's ethical for like people to like own birds as like pets and stuff?
I don't know if it's a question of ethics, really.
Do you feel comfortable owning one?
I personally don't. I'm a big bird watcher, and I love observing birds in the wild.
Thanks for tuning in to The Rubin Report. You can watch the show live every weekday at 11 a.m. Eastern and 8 a.m. Pacific on Rumble, Locals, and YouTube. Don't forget to rate, review, share, and subscribe to this podcast. And you can join me for the post-game wrap-up every day after the show at rubinreport.locals.com.